Hello, Uncle Dan.
Well, hi, Aunt Sue.
And hello to all of you who are joining us today for another story.
Good to have you with us again. Today we're going to tell the concluding story about Moses. Aunt Sue, as you have listened to the stories of Moses, what qualities of character do you think best tell us the kind of man he really was?
Well, Uncle Dan, he was a man of great faith in God.
Good. What else?
He had qualities of leadership and is considered to be one of the world's greatest leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible describes him as being very meek.
Right.
But perhaps above all else, he was an unusually patient man.
Very good. I was hoping you would say that. Today's story is found in the Old Testament, the book of Numbers, chapters 13, 14, and 20 through 24. I call the story
The Man of Patience. The story of the children of Israel traveling from Egypt to the Promised Land is a story of complaint and murmuring. When the slightest thing seemed to go wrong, the people blamed Moses. He bore these accusations and complaints in silence. In love for his people and in self-condemnation, he often prayed,
O God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, do not lay the complaints and murmurings of these thy people to their charge. Forgive them, O God, and lay their sin at my door.
Soon after leaving Mount Sinai, the children of Israel arrived at Kadesh on the borders of the Promised Land. Moses wisely chose 12 young men to cross the border to spy out Canaan.
You 12 young men have been chosen by direction of God to go into Canaan as spies. Bring back a report of its people, whether they are strong or weak, few or many. Observe the land, its situation, its natural advantages, and the productivity of the soil. Bring back also some of the fruit of the land. Now go. Go and survey the entire land from the southern to its northern borders.
So this is Hebron.
Yes, Hebron. One of the most renowned spots of the world. For many years, it was the home of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The cave of Machpelah is here.
That's very true, Joshua, but it isn't a friendly spot any longer. It's now occupied by the Anakims, probably the fiercest people in all the world.
And did you ever see such large giants as these Anakims?
I didn't even know such large men existed. They make us look like mere pygmies.
And the cities of Anakin, such strong walls and fortified, positively impregnable they are.
I think it's impossible for us to conquer Canaan. The people are too strong.
The Lord is on our side. Nothing is impossible to God.
Anyway, it's not our duty to decide if we can or cannot occupy Canaan. Our job is to look it over and report what we find to Moses.
People of Israel, you have heard our report. Canaan is a good land. It is beautiful and productive. Nevertheless, there are many difficulties and dangers that we will face if we undertake to conquer the land.
And what my companion says is true. Canaan is populated by giants so large that, by comparison, we are mere pygmies.
The nations of Canaan are powerful. The cities are walled and impregnable. It is useless to even think of possessing the land.
We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we and will conquer us.
We would be better off to remain here or go back to Egypt.
Listen to me, my people. I am Caleb. I am one of the 12 you sent to spy out Canaan. What these two have just said about Canaan is true. Yet it is also true that our God is stronger than a million Canaans. He is well able to deliver the people into our hands. Together with Joshua, I beg of you, let us trust in the Lord our God and go up and possess Canaan.
Caleb and Joshua do not tell you the truth. They are unfaithful to God and to you and your families. It would be better for us to die in the wilderness than to die fighting the strong nations of Canaan.
Away with Caleb and Joshua! Stone them!
My dear people, you have just seen the bright light and mighty sound. These things signal God's displeasure of the report brought back by the 10 unfaithful spies. God abhors your haste to accept that report and your murderous design against Joshua and Caleb. I shall go into the tabernacle and plead with God in your behalf. My dear people, I have just returned from the tabernacle. God is displeased with you, yet he is long-suffering and has promised to spare you from immediate destruction. God is going to do unto you according to your own desires. You have repeatedly said that it were better for you to die in the wilderness than to go forward into the promised land. All of you who were 20 years old and older when we left Egypt shall die here in the wilderness. All except Caleb and Joshua, who have followed fully in the precepts of God. As they spent 40 days in their journey, so shall you spend 40 years wandering in the wilderness.
The decree that Israel was not to enter Canaan for 40 years was a bitter disappointment to Moses, Aaron, Caleb, and Joshua. Yet, without a murmur, they accepted the divine decision. But not so those who had led in the complaining and revolt.
I tell you, men, that we don't have to wait 40 years to possess Canaan.
But that is God's sentence upon us.
Now, why did God make such a decree?
Because we refused to enter Canaan.
Why were we unwilling to try to conquer Canaan?
Because we were afraid we weren't strong enough.
Because we feared the giants of Canaan. Because we were afraid to tackle the walled cities of the land. In short, because we were cowards. I say that if we can prove that we are not cowards, God will change his mind and permit us to possess Canaan.
Granting that's true, how can we redeem ourselves?
We'll collect together all our well-bodied and able men, arm them and seize the land by force and possess it.
But the people of Canaan are giants, and the city's fortified and walled.
We'll attack only a small segment at a time.
We'll be defeated.
Well, frankly, I'd rather die in battle, bravely fighting for my heritage in Canaan, than to wander for 40 years in the wilderness.
And die in the wilderness anyway.
Exactly.
You say we'll attack just a small portion of Canaan?
At once, yes. There are two Canaan tribes near here. We'll attack and defeat them first.
I doubt if Moses will concur in this scheme.
We don't need his approval.
Who will lead us against the enemy?
We don't need a leader. There'll be so many of us, hundreds of thousands against a few thousand of the enemy. Ha! We can conquer them by mere force of number.
The vast hordes of untrained and leaderless Israelites marched out of camp, eager to meet the hastily assembled but strong, well-organized enemy armies. Moses, being warned of the circumstances, hastened after the Israelite army.
Halt! Halt! I wish to talk to you. Please stop and listen to me. Please, I beg of you.
Why should we listen to you, Moses? You don't have anything to say that we want to hear.
In the name of decency and the God of heaven, please stop the men and listen to what I have to say.
All right. Men, halt! Stop for a minute. Moses wishes to say something.
You are marching to battle without the blessing of God. You are not organized. No prayer has been offered for victory. You will not succeed. Go not up, for the Lord is not with you. The Amalekites are prepared for you. They are strong, and you shall fall by their sword.
We'd rather die, Moses, fighting, than go in the wilderness for 40 years. Am I right, men?
The Amalekites had stationed themselves on a rocky tableland, reached only by difficult passes and a steep and dangerous ascent. The immense numbers of Israelites slowly ascended the mountain paths, exposed to the deadly rocks thundering down from the enemy above. Those who managed to reach the top, exhausted, were fiercely repulsed and driven back with great loss. The field of carnage was strewn with the bodies of the dead. The vast army of Israel was defeated. Nothing now remained for them to do but to fall back into the wilderness. The wilderness that would be the grave of a whole generation. For nearly 40 years, the children of Israel are lost to view in the obscurity of the desert. During those 40 years, God provided them with manna and water. He sustained them so that their clothes waxed not old, neither did their feet swell. At the end of 40 years, they returned again to Kadesh. Here, Miriam, Moses' sister, died and was buried. During all their wanderings, the Lord God had caused them to be followed by a living stream of water, so that they had thirsted not, neither did they lack for water. Just before they reached Kadesh, this living stream ceased to flow. Soon the murmuring and complaining was heard.
Moses, our wives and children are thirsty. We want water. We demand that you give us water or we and our cattle will die.
You brought us out of Egypt to kill us. It would have been much better had we remained in Egypt.
Give us water, Moses, or we'll take matters in our own hands.
We must have water. We're thirsty.
Water, please. Water, give me water. Do you hear that, Moses? If our families and flocks die of thirst, it will be your fault. Your fault!
And Moses went to God in prayer. And the glory of the Lord appeared to Moses, and he was commanded to gather the people together and to speak to a massive rock that was before them. From the rock would gush forth a stream of pure water.
Hear now, you rebels! Must I fetch water out of this rock by striking it?
Then, in direct disobedience to God's command to speak to the rock, Moses, losing his temper with the multitude, struck the rock twice with his rod.
Water! There's all the water.
Moses was now an aged man. Long had he borne with the rebellion and obstinacy of Israel, but this complaint had been too much for him. His patience had given away, and in anger and impatience, he had twice struck the rock.
My dear people, God has informed me that because of my sin of anger in striking the rock, I will not be permitted to lead you into Canaan. I was chosen of God to shoulder great responsibility. God is no respecter of persons. He will punish the transgressions of those in responsible positions as surely as he will punish the sins of the least among you.
Me, Moses, sir?
Yes, Joshua. We are going to leave here for Canaan.
Our long years of wandering in the wilderness has ended.
Yes, and I want you to take a message to the king of Edom. Remind him that we are brother peoples, both descended from Abraham. We are sons of Jacob. They are sons of Esau. Tell him that we are desirous of traveling.
Audience granted. You may come forward.
Long live the king.
I understand that you are an ambassador from Moses.
Yes, your majesty. I come bearing tidings of peace from thy brothers, the Israelites.
Brothers? I refuse to acknowledge the relationship.
Oh, your majesty, Moses instructed me to say unto you, you know the trouble that has befallen the Israelites, how our fathers went down to Egypt and were made slaves. We cried unto God, and he heard us and brought us forth from Egypt. And now we are camped at Kadesh, a city on thy border.
I know all about that. What is it you want?
O great and mighty king of Edom, we desire to pass through your country on our way to the river Jordan.
Pass through Edom? A million of you?
But we will remain on the highway, your majesty. We will not drink of your water or partake of any of your food except we buy and pay for it with money.
General, double the guards at all the border passes and see that Moses and his hordes don't set foot within our borders. As for you, you may tell your Moses that I'm no longer afraid of him and the supposed superhuman power of his God.
But, your majesty, we will harm nothing in your land. We will pay for everything we use.
40 years ago, I might have let you go through Edom because I was afraid of you. But your defeat, complete defeat by the Amalekites, chased all the fright out of me. And if you so much as set one foot on my land, I'll completely destroy all of you by the sword. You can tell your Moses that.
Well, he leaves us no alternative but to go around Edom.
But Moses, sir, I understood that we were to possess all the land of Canaan, even Edom.
No, Joshua, my son. God specifically commanded that we were not to possess Edom, nor are we in any wise to disturb them, for they are the children of Esau, our brethren. We must go around Edom.
So once again, Israel turned southward and made their way over the desert wastes, because they had glimpsed the green spot among the hills and valleys of Eden. The desert seemed even more gloomy and desolate than before. From the mountain range overlooking this gloomy desert rises Mount Hor. Arriving at its base, Moses commanded that the people halt and make camp. Later, Moses, Aaron, and Aaron's son Eleazar made their slow way to the summit of this mount. Arriving at the top, they beheld, as far as the eye could reach, the scenes of their desert wanderings. Somewhere beyond was the path leading to the promised land, that land whose blessings Moses and Aaron were not to enjoy.
It's surely beautiful from up here.
Very beautiful.
You brought me and my son, Eleazar, here for a special reason, Moses. What?
For many years, Aaron, my brother, you have stood by my side. Together we have faced unnumbered dangers. We have shared signal blessings of God. But the time has come when we must be separated.
Yes, I understand. It has been a pleasure, Moses, to have worked with you. With gladness, I recall the many scenes spent with you and your unselfish love for me and for Israel. You permitted me to uphold your hands, and we gave battle against the Amalekites. I was permitted to ascend Mount Sinai with you and approach into the presence of God. But with sadness and a heavy heart, I recall the many times I failed you. Because of my weak character, our people worshipped the golden calf at Mount Sinai. Because of me, Miriam rebelled and was punished.
True repentance wipes away all sin and creates within us a new heart, a new and stronger character. Our heads, yours and mine, Aaron, are white with the snows of many winters. We are bowed with age. Our work must be taken over by younger men. God said unto me, Moses, strip Aaron of his priestly garments and put them upon Eleazar, his son.
With deep sorrow, Moses removed from Aaron the holy vestments and placed them upon Eleazar. And there on Mount Hor, Aaron died,
and there he was buried. Soon after leaving Mount Hor, the Israelites suffered defeat in an engagement with Arad, one of the Canaanite kings. As they earnestly sought help from God, heaven's divine aid was granted. The tide of battle turned, and the enemy was completely routed.
I am thoroughly convinced of one thing, my friend.
And what might that be?
That we are strong enough and capable of defeating every army in all the land of Canaan.
How right you are, my friend. Onward, Israel! Onward to battle! Onward to the promised land!
Which proves conclusively that we could have possessed Canaan 40 years ago. We were as strong then as now, stronger. We could as easily have defeated our enemies then as now. Do you realize why we didn't?
Sure. Moses.
Moses is at the bottom of all our troubles. Moses, Moses, Moses. For some reason, he wants us to die here in the wilderness.
Israel indulged in a spirit of discontent. They became rebellious, dissatisfied. The people spoke against God and against Moses, accusing him of being their worst enemy, the cause of all their distress and afflictions. God withdrew his protecting hand, and immediately fiery, venomous serpents came out from crevices and beneath rocks and began attacking the people. Terror and confusion was everywhere.
Moses, Moses, we have sinned, for we have spoken against God and against you. Pray unto God, Moses, that he may take away the serpents from us.
And Moses, being divinely commanded by God, made a serpent of brass and elevated it in the sight of all the people. Those who looked upon the serpent, believing, were healed of the poisonous bite.
As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man is lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life.
After passing to the south of Edom, the Israelites turned northward and again set their faces toward the promised land. When the Israelites reached the Jordan River, they found a beautiful campsite awaiting them. It was a sheltered valley, several miles in width and extending some distance along the river. In this climate of the tropics and amid the acacia groves, weary Israel found an agreeable retreat. Here it was that Balaam's diabolic scheme to lead Israel into idolatry finally succeeded. Here it was that Moses repeated to the people the 10 precepts of God's immortal law.
Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven.
Here it was that Moses, for the last time, stood before his people, the people with whom his interest and his life had so long been united.
People, people of Israel, it is with sad heart that I come before you on this solemn occasion. My work is finished. Joshua, a man chosen of God, shall lead you across Jordan to inherit Canaan. I charge you, dear people of Israel, heed his voice. Follow his leading, and final victory will be yours. Israel shall dwell in safety in a land of corn and wine. Happy art thou, O Israel. Who is like unto thee? A people saved by Jehovah, the shield of thy help.
Moses turned from the congregation and in silence and alone made his way out of camp. Watching him, the people recalled with a new appreciation Moses' parental tenderness, his wise counsels, and his untiring labors in their behalf. How often, when their sins had invited the just judgments of God, had the prayers of Moses prevailed to spare them. Their grief was now heightened by remorse. With tear-stained eyes, they watched their aged leader disappear into the mists of Mount Pisgah. Finally, upon the lonely summit of Mount Pisgah stood Moses, gazing with undimmed eye upon the scene spread out before him. Far away to the west lay the blue waters of the great sea. In the north, Mount Hermon stood out against the sky. To the east was Moab. Away to the south stretched the vast reaches of the wilderness of their 40 years of wandering. In solitude, Moses, like a tired warrior, lay down to rest. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, the man of patience, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he was buried in a valley in the land of Moab, over against Beth Peor. But no man knoweth the place of his sepulchre.